Hello and welcome to the FC90 podcast. If you're wondering why you're not hearing the cockney tones of James Jones, it's because he's not here. And thus, myself, Christy Mallion, has been promoted to acting host, which I'm sure we're all delighted with. I say we're all. I'm joined by, first of all, George Douglas.
Hello, how are you?
Of Football League World fame, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, how is Football League World?
Ticking along nicely, by good. All accounts.
Good, by all accounts.
Yeah.
And I'm joined by my right-hand man, even though he's sitting on my left today, Jack Savile.
Hello.
How are you, Jack Savile?
Good. Bit disappointed that you're now my boss in a podcast environment as well.
Yeah, well, get used to it, I'd say. And then finally, I'm joined by Matt Dawson.
Hello.
How are you, Matt?
Not bad, thank you. Not
how
bad.
Is covering Leeds? Well, I suppose you're not doing that this week, are you, to be fair? You're overlooking other people covering
overlooking
Leeds.
Overlooking Leeds, as it were.
Yeah. How are Leeds getting on in general?
Well, not too badly.
Yeah.
If you consider the league table, but their performances are pretty abject. So.
Okay. Well, maybe that's something we'll come on to a little later when we slalom down the pyramid, as it's quickly becoming known. Mm. George being the lead slalomer in that scenario.
Wow, we'll end up very off-piste.
Oh, imagine. but before that, we do have the main talking points, which I've chosen this week. We're starting off with the Ballon d'Or. Do we really need 30 nominees? Because, I mean, looking at that list, does Gini Wijnaldum really deserve to be on that list? I'd say probably not.
Yes.
Well, I'm sure you disagree, Dags. Hugo Lloris, pretty iffy, that one. Mm. Marquinhos, if that's how you pronounce it, I doubt it is, but not hugely convinced by that. And Dusan Tadic as well, which is a bit of
Dusan.
Dusan?
Dusan.
Dusan. Either way, he doesn't deserve to be there. So that's our first talking point today. We'll look at who gets our vote and who else doesn't deserve to be there. We're also going to be talking about Arsenal, and I have a little theory on Arsenal that Jack Savile quickly swatted down yesterday. But for me, it's pretty simple. New players, new manager, new board members, but the same old Arsenal. Can we really blame Unai Emery if nothing has changed? Can one man reverse 2 decades of Arsene Wenger in the space of 18 months? So we'll discuss that shortly. And then finally, we're going to be looking at the promoted teams after Aston Villa won at the weekend, as did fellow promoted team...
Sheffield United. Just testing us there, yeah.
Just a test. Well done, chaps. Full marks. Well done.
Norwich drew as well.
Norwich drew. So we'll be looking at, who we think's done the best so far. Is this actually the best promoted three we've seen for a long time in the Premier League? I suspect it might be. And then we'll predict who we think is going to finish highest. So let's ricka rewind, as they say.
Wow.
In the garage scene, I believe.
As they say.
Yeah.
How much do you know about the garage scene?
Yeah. Loads, mate. Loads.
Really?
I'm always in the garages.
Yeah.
Let's not get into what you're doing.
Yeah, listening to, Craig David and such. But yeah, let's, as I just said, ricka rewind. Pretty cool, eh? Pretty cool. And we'll go back to Ballon d'Or. So, I put in my notes here, more like Fallon Bore, which at the time seems like a really good pun, but now probably not.
Well, what time was that?
I think that was about 8 o'clock last night, or Carte d'Or, I've seen some said about the shortlist.
Okay.
So
it's quite nice.
It's all ice cream, mate. It's all ice cream. Mm. So, gentlemen, what are our thoughts, particularly in regards to Wijnaldum, Lloris, Marquinhos and Tadic?
I mean, as someone who would be inclined to say that Wijnaldum doesn't deserve his place in the list, I think he's good value.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing central midfield for a team that gets to the Champions League final and is clearly better than the captain, Jordan Henderson,
ooh,
and is pretty much the heartbeat of that team in terms of going forward and defensively, to be honest, I think he's the one player, obviously, Oxlade-Chamberlain side, who offers the sort of dynamism to get both ends of the pitch. And... yeah, I think he's good value for it.
Okay, well, here's my retort, if you will. Is Wijnaldum even guaranteed to start for Liverpool each week?
No. I mean, the fact of the matter is, he started on the bench in the game, the famous Anfield game when Liverpool beat Barcelona.
Yeah.
And he only came on, obviously, scored those 2 goals.
And he wasn't very good in the final, either, to be fair. So.
No, he's not the most consistent, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He people view him as a very reliable player, but he does have games where he does go a bit amiss in the midfield.
Mm-hmm.
He's understated in what he does anyway on the pitch, so he's never going to really grab headlines apart from when he does occasionally score. I suppose my only question would be, who would you have in over him though? Because I don't think there are actually many great midfielders.
Personally, I would reduce the shortlist. Yeah. I don't see why it needs to be 30. Mm. That's my main complaint, I think, here. Matt, how are you feeling about Hugo Lloris being in there?
I mean, it's a bit questionable, isn't it?
Yeah.
To be honest, some of the clangers he's had, I think, particularly last year or so, I don't think he's been at his best probably since that World Cup. But yeah, it just seems like a bit of a... Wijnaldum as well, just very questionable.
Yeah.
But if you consider that Massimo Luongo was on it a couple of years ago, is it really that bad?
Yes, that's a very good point.
On the Wijnaldum point, though, Man City have got, I think, 5 players on there. How many of those would you say guaranteed starters? Sergio Aguero isn't a guaranteed starter.
That is true.
Obviously, I appreciate that City operate on a slightly different playing field due to the depth of the squad, but mm-hmm. I think, given Liverpool's resources in centre midfield, I don't think that's a fair jive to poke at Wijnaldum, personally.
Okay. All right, fair enough. And let's go on to quickly... who gets your vote for this year's Ballon d'Or? Do you feel there's any clear front runners?
Go on, George, just say it.
No, I know you expect me to say Virgil van Dijk, but
no.
I don't really like these awards, to be honest. Yeah. I think they're pretty.
There's two of them now, isn't there? There's the Ballon d'Or, and you've got the FIFA's best.
Yeah.
Too many.
What's the difference?
Well, it was like combined together, wasn't it? Ballon d'Or and FIFA ran it together, and then I think they've just kind of split them off as two separate things.
The Ballon d'Or's run by a French magazine, isn't it?
It's run by France Football, isn't it, I believe, whereas FIFA Awards are obviously run by FIFA. Yeah.
So to me, although the Ballon d'Or has become the more prestigious, if you like, in our minds in recent years, it's actually probably less prestigious, isn't it? It's just been around for longer than this FIFA one. Has to be Messi or Ronaldo, though, doesn't it?
I guess really? So. I mean, looking at this list, Kevin De Bruyne kind of stands out, even though he missed a lot of last season.
Yeah, too much.
I think if you're looking at in Premier League terms at this list, I do think probably Van Dijk is the front runner for me.
Yeah.
Begrudgingly, because I'm a bit funny, sceptical about a centre back being the best player in the world.
I think the award needs that.
Maybe.
It's about time that we just took the gloss away from Messi and Ronaldo and actually celebrated something a bit different, to be honest.
Mm. It was Cannavaro the last defender that did win it.
I believe
It's going back. It was a long, long time.
Early 2000s, was it?
2006.
After when they won the World Cup.
Yeah. Matt, anyone got your vote?
I mean, Messi or Ronaldo, I think.
Messi or Ronaldo, okay. I've just seen Riyad Mahrez is on this list as well, which is preposterous, to be honest.
Why?
Well, because what's he done? Warmed up the bench for a year.
Yeah, and then he played really well at the start of the season.
Oh, well done, mate. Well done. He played well for 4 games.
Mm.
Get him on the list.
Maybe there should be an award for the best substitute.
Bring that in.
Jermaine Defoe would have won that a lot.
The Jermaine Defoe Award, they could probably call it. Okay, all right, so that's Ballon d'Or. Done and dusted, out the way, completed it, tick.
Nice.
Let's move on to more pressing matters. Arsenal lost to Sheffield United on Monday night, and I think, Jamie Carragher, it's easy after the match to go, oh yeah, I thought Arsenal would struggle here, but I do think a lot of people thought they would before the game. In some ways, that's respectful to Sheffield United, who have had a pretty good start to the season and looked like a very solid team, it has to be said.
Mm.
On the other hand, Matt Dawson, what is going wrong at Arsenal? Is it all Unai Emery's fault? Can he really be blamed for a lack of change at a club that has basically been suffering from the same problem for over a decade now?
I think you can look at both sides of the coin, to be honest. I think Emery was never going to fix things within like a year or so. But then the lack of change is particularly alarming. If you're bringing in a new coach, you'd expect there to be some sort of change for the better,
mm-hmm.
in some sense, but they've ended up playing in a more negative fashion. And I think that's sort of one of the main issues as well. You've got some of the best forwards in the league and then nothing to combine midfield to attack. And there was a lot of talk about Mesut Ozil. I know he gets a lot of attention anyway when he's not on the team, but I think Arsenal fans have started to realise now that you just have to put this illness or whatever he has aside. If he doesn't play in some games, he doesn't play. But if he is available, he simply has to be in the team.
Mm-hmm.
Because you look at that midfield and Sabas isn't a number 10. Willock isn't really a number 10 either.
Yeah.
Plays kind of deep lying. So I think that needs to be one of the main changes in terms of personnel.
On that note, just quickly, was it a mistake to start Joe Willock over Ceballos and Ozil?
Yeah.
On Monday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was. I can get behind playing some of these young players, but Willock in the Premier League has done sort of next to nothing. He's been good in the cup competitions, but yeah, I think it's a bit too soon to be relying on him to sort of be your main creator.
Mm. Okay. Jack, George, what's your, as sort of outside viewers, what's your opinions of Emery? Do you feel like a lot of the problems should be placed on his shoulders, or do you think he's kind of fighting the tide of history a little bit here?
Mm. Yeah, there is a bit of a tidal wave of history coming down on him, which is kind of what you alluded to yesterday when we had our heated discussion. But I think that...
which I won, but never mind.
Well, there was a few people backing my side. But anyway, I think it's one of those where... like Arsenal have been struggling with this sort of identity problem for such a long time, and someone has to kind of, you know, address the problem directly. And who's that going to be? Is it going to be the 11 players? It probably should be, but I think ultimately it boils down to the manager to change the, I don't know, the culture or the identity of the club in some degree. And I think, as Matt says, you know, since Wenger's left, what's actually changed? If anything, they've got a little bit less entertaining. But I mean, there's sometimes you watch Arsenal and they do look almost frightening, like they can be really pulsating, but it's just comes in such short bursts that it's really difficult to determine what Emery is actually doing. If they could kind of maintain that for a long period, then they could be a top team.
I seem to think that Emery's come in and he actually did quite a good job last year, I thought.
I thought so, apart from the last sort of month.
Yeah, it tailed off badly, but so I thought he might build on that. There seems to be an issue, though, with this identity thing where, Arsenal have always been, as long as I can remember, have always been known for playing good football.
Mm-hmm.
But the best Arsenal teams have also been capable of getting in a fight.
Yeah.
And, you know, having that 50-50 pretty much. You look at, I mean, it's hard to get players these days that will put their foot in as well as can play, like Patrick Vieira and Gilberto Silva and blah, blah, blah. I think Arsenal's problem, from the board down to the manager, is... yes, they want nice football, but they just don't seem to accept that you do actually need that kind of hard B word in your team.
You need a few of them, really.
You need a few of them. And it seems everyone seems to be screaming at them from the outside. This is what you need. It doesn't seem to filter through. And they've had sort of half attempts at it by getting Granit Xhaka in, who's just a loose cannon, and actually in 50-50s doesn't always win them.
Mm-hmm.
Socrates as well.
Yeah.
So
they've got a few, but they're a bit like, they haven't got the quality to back up being lunatics.
Yeah.
I think the only player that does that is Guendouzi, and that's a bit of a concern if you look into a 20-year-old who has a little bit of flair to him, but it's far from the finished product.
Likes falling over a lot as well.
Yeah, but he does get stuck in and he does stick up for his teammates and he carries the team forward, but he's the only one in the team that actually does it.
So. It strikes me that Emery's not actually that kind of manager. He can get them playing good football, but doesn't have the football outlook where he wants to bring in some fighters as well. I think that might be why the board have gone for him.
Yeah.
They need to really change from what they've done for so long.
Well, this is
no one's brave enough to commit to
that. What I found kind of strange, though, when they went to Old Trafford and drew, and there was a lot of criticism afterwards saying they should have taken the game to Man United. Man United were there for the taking, but he also started three defensive mids at Old Trafford, and I don't think Arsene Wenger would ever have done that.
No.
So, you know, I think there are signs that Emery is willing to be more pragmatic, which everyone says what Arsenal needs, but it now feels like within doing that, he's sort of lost a lot of the core Arsenal support. So where does he really go from here, Matt?
It's a difficult one to assess. I think he's a little bit stubborn in a sense, especially with his team selections. Seen so many times it's always down to the substitutes to come on and make an impact. And there was a big deal made out of that last season, particularly the number of changes he was making at half-time.
Yeah.
But for the considerable future, I can't really see sort of how Arsenal are going to build any sort of identity under him. I still think there needs to be an element of time, but it just seems to be sort of going around in a constant circle of a few good results, and then the negative results will creep in with some poor football. So,
so are we saying Emery out?
Not yet, no.
Not yet. Oh, feels like it's getting closer, though, doesn't it?
It is.
I do wonder whether Arsenal would have benefited of deciding who they wanted to succeed Wenger, with Wenger having a say. I'm assuming he had some say in successor. Did he?
Well,
not really. He didn't want to go.
Who knows? Yeah,
he didn't want to go.
Yeah, probably recommend someone rubbish.
So they didn't really plan it. They should have learned from what happened with United and Ferguson leaving. Find out who you want to succeed Wenger and get him into the club, but work with Wenger. Maybe they can address a few things, and then there's that line of succession, because not many clubs need that anymore.
Yeah,
because managers come and go every few months, but at Arsenal they needed to go a bit old fashioned and get someone in familiar with the club, familiar with the style and the culture and everything that's been built, and then help tick it along but evolve it with some fresh ideas.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I think it's no coincidence that, you know, Man United and Arsenal are suffering from almost exactly the same problems after having very long managers. So that is Arsenal again, completed it, ticked off our list.
I actually have one final point.
Go on, Jack, quickly squeeze it in.
The loss of Sven Mislintat has kind of gone under the radar a little bit, but I think last season it seemed like Arsenal had a clear direction which they were going in terms of their transfer strategy, and with Emery kind of felt like, you know, the start of a new cycle or whatever, and then they lost him and then they signed David Luiz on deadline day, which is about the, if you could pick one player that Arsenal didn't need, it was probably him. And, you know, you go from Mislintat picking out gems like Guendouzi, who no one would have heard of for, you know, 9 million, and then they lose him and they end up signing and playing David Luiz, who's just, yeah, just clearly not a defender and not what Arsenal needed. So I think that has also impacted them, probably more so than people are realising at the moment. And that's obviously not great for Emery's, you know, mentality moving forward if he loses his sort of chief scout.
Yeah, very true. Okay, so that is Arsenal completed. Tick. And then we'll move on to their nemesis on Monday night, Sheffield United, amongst other promoted clubs, including Aston Villa and Norwich. First and foremost, is this, as I said earlier, is this the best three promoted teams we've seen for a long time in the Premier League? I think it actually might be. In terms of
a collective?
In terms of their general willingness to play football, slash, in Sheffield United's case, organisation, being a very good team. I know Cardiff were organised, but it was kind of organised in a everyone get behind the ball sense.
Yeah.
Where Sheffield United are a lot more organised in that. When they win the ball back, they have a pretty clear plan of how they're going to try and get forward with it as well. I think Chris Wilder is a very good manager. I think I've not seen, you know, seen bits over the last few years, but certainly in his time in the Premier League, from the games I've seen, you can tell he knows what he's doing. He's a very smart man. So, yeah, is this the best three we've seen? Thoughts?
For me, it's the best three that have come up altogether.
Yeah.
For perhaps ever, because it's normally three teams have come up and quite often the team that won the championship ends up being the worst team for whatever reason. I mean, you could argue perhaps Norwich have tailed off a little bit, but they're still pretty strong. What's good about them is, and I think this is true of all successful promoted teams that come into the Premier League, they've stuck to their style of play and they haven't tried to adapt to playing the bigger teams. Obviously they do need more sophisticated plans, if you like, for the likes of Man City and Liverpool, but they've stuck to what they believe in. Sheffield United were brilliant on Monday. They've been organised throughout and they still commit to getting those underlapping centre-backs going forwards, which is what got them from League One all the way to the Premier League, so it makes sense to stick to it. And actually, not many teams replicate it, so of course it's going to shock a few teams in the Premier League. Villa have needed a little bit more time to develop their style of play, and they still probably need a bit more to fully get to what Dean Smith wants, because obviously at Brentford he had more time and he became one of the most highly regarded in the league for his playing style. But it's definitely coming at Villa, and what they've got is the reputation and the finance.
Their midfield is absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Conor Hourihane, who wasn't even getting in the team at the start of the season, is technically as good as any midfielder, you know, in the bottom half, in my opinion. You know, if he gets the ball on the edge of the box and you're guaranteed a shot on target.
Yeah, he's getting to Man United's midfield at the moment.
I think, who said earlier this week, I think Alan Brazil said if Man United had Tyrone Mings, John McGinn and Grealish, they'd be in, you know, pretty comfortable in the top six right now.
But then, would they be? Because how would they perform under Solskjaer?
Very true.
I don't always buy an argument like that. But anyway, but John McGinn and Grealish have also been excellent, and that midfield was well established in the Championship, and again, have not ripped up their team, Villa. Mm. They did add a lot of players in the summer, but they've managed, a lot of criticism was, oh, they're doing a Fulham.
Yeah,
they haven't really so far. They've managed to keep what they wanted to do, but add to it.
Sort of the spine of the team has remained, really, hasn't it? I know they've changed the striker, but they needed a striker anyway.
Yeah, because Abraham left.
Yeah,
and then obviously Norwich are playing good football too. Mm. And Daniel Farke, I know it's not been as great as it was at the start of the season, but they're still keeping to what they're doing, and they're going to have dips. Of course, they are. They are a newly promoted team. Mm. In terms of best teams that have come up recently, again, I'd say it's the teams that have committed to their style. So, like Bournemouth under Eddie Howe, stuck to what they know. Now they're an established Premier League team. Swansea, when they came up under Brendan Rodgers,
very good,
who were excellent.
Wolves as well,
and Wolves, last season.
Matt, which team has impressed you most?
I think Sheffield United have, actually.
Yeah.
Particularly after Monday night. I know Arsenal weren't great, but just a lot of their play, particularly at Bramall Lane, I think could just keep them in the division itself, to be honest. They look like a team that are going to take a while to figure out, and it wouldn't surprise me if they were sort of the team out of the ones that have come up to finish highest in the division. I think the way they sort of set up, the way they're so organised, particularly with the two wing-backs, and then you've got three centre-backs in there as well. If you try to go down the middle, it seems like a blind avenue. And then if you try and work it out wide, particularly with Arsenal's case, you just had the two wing-backs there sort of fighting their case. So I think, yeah, they're definitely one that have impressed me the most. And then Villa as well. As Dag said, they've taken a bit of time to get going, but I think that was natural given how many players they've signed. Yeah. But yeah, I think they'll start to sort of pick up some more points now.
Jack, how about you? Which teams stood out for you the most?
I think in terms of the quality of the players, probably Villa, but Sheffield United are the best sort of well-oiled machine, I would say. But if you look at the three teams that have come up and how they've changed the landscape of the Premier League, it's pretty mad. Like Watford are bottom of the league, deservedly so, but they're a good side. They're in the FA Cup final last season, and I was looking at the table before and thinking, who's going to get relegated? Like three good teams going to have to go down. There's a lot of arguments saying the Premier League's got worse in terms of its standard because of the top six breakup, but I think towards the bottom of the table it's definitely evened out as well. And sometimes you look at the bottom five and like, geez, there's some really terrible teams here. But I mean, some good teams going to go down. I imagine Norwich could be in a little bit of trouble even though they've had a good start, but Sheffield United and Villa I think should be okay. And very impressive what I've seen from all three teams.
Okay, cool. Alright, so in a second we'll go slaloming down the pyramid, but just before we do that and have a very short break, quick one club answer from everyone. Who do you think is going to finish highest? Start with you, George.
Villa.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Matt?
Yeah, Sheffield United I'm going for.
Jack?
That's two words.
Said one club, not one word.
Villa.
I actually think Villa as well. I think there's just, that midfield is just really good. It could be a top half midfield quite comfortably.
I think they just have more clout in January as well.
Yeah.
If they need to.
Okay. Alright, cool. Alright, we'll take a quick break and then when we come back we'll be talking all matters EFL. Welcome back to the FC90 podcast. Me, Jack, Matt and George have climbed into a slalom and George is going to direct us down the pyramid of English football.
Yeah.
So, George, I'll let you take it away.
This extended analogy is starting to really get stretched.
It's getting very detailed.
Yeah,
I'll put it that way. Yeah,
yeah.
Can you climb into a slalom?
Well, how should you get into it?
Step into it. I don't know.
Yeah. Just I don't at the know. Top of one, aren't you? And then you, as you do, you slalom down it.
I guess so. Or am I thinking of a toboggan?
You could fall,
people. Yeah, yeah, toboggan. Yeah,
bobsleigh.
Even then, climbing doesn't seem like the right direction.
Well, you're getting on top, aren't you? Anyway, we're dealing in semantics here. We're dealing in semantics. George, do you want to take it away with your EFL rundown?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay.
I was going to make a cowbell noise like they do in the Winter Olympics. But
ding, ding, ding.
Start with, we're in the middle of the week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's midweek games going on.
It's Wednesday, just for the benefit of our listeners.
For those listening. Let's talk about Tuesday's games, because obviously Wednesday games haven't happened. They're happening tonight. Just picked out a few from around the EFL that may have some interesting talking points. Millwall 2, Cardiff 2 at the Den. Millwall have got Gary Rowett as their new manager. He didn't actually manage them yesterday. He was just sat in the director's box to watch what Neil Warnock called a scandalous result, as he so often does. He basically said Cardiff put in about as good as away performance as you can at a place like that, referring to the Den. Right. And basically threw away. They went in twice front and threw it away both times.
Okay.
So Millwall got a point in Adam Barrett's last caretaker game in charge, and Gary Rowett's there now for Sunday or Saturday.
Okay.
Saturday.
Interesting. Yeah. Yes, Saturday.
Elsewhere in the Championship, Brentford, they've turned the corner a little bit. They went to Swansea yesterday and won 3-0, which is quite an impressive result, really, when Swansea have been one of the early pace setters, though their form has dropped off considerably in the last six or seven games. And Brentford, you know, they've always had a reputation of a good footballing side. Are they eventually going to make the playoffs? This season they've started pretty poorly, but it looks like things have started to click, and they were very good last night in South Wales. So see if they got something to build on. Obviously they beat Millwall at the weekend 3-2 with a very late winner, so it looks like they've got a bit of a springboard going into the coming weeks. Keeping with the London club theme, QPR drew 2-2 at home to Reading at Loftus Road.
Isn't that the Hoops derby, is that known as?
Yeah, yeah. Reading called QPR the fake Hoops, I believe. Based on them both wearing blue and white hoops.
They both wear the same kit, don't they?
Yeah. So it's one of the weirder derbies.
Yeah.
Sort of local. It's on a similar route, isn't it? West London out towards Berkshire.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway, entertaining game.
Was that the first game in charge for the new Reading manager?
It wasn't, no. Mark Bowen's first game in charge was a 1-0 win over Preston at the weekend with a really late goal from Matt Miazga.
Yeah.
And they've got another point at Loftus Road. So it looks like things are a little bit rosier under Bowen. The Royals, obviously, he arrived with a lot of rancour behind him. I said rancour. And so yeah, 4 points from two games, started pretty well. Looks like the players are pretty happy behind him. Mark Warburton wasn't too pleased. Slated their defence. They haven't kept a clean sheet all season so far, QPR. So they'll be looking to change that sooner rather than later. League One, Phil Pargerson at Sunderland took charge of his, I believe his first game yesterday. I don't think he was in the dugout at the weekend. Anyway, they beat Tranmere 5-0. Sunderland fans want their team to be a lot more attacking, and after 100 1-1 draws under Jack Ross last season, looks like they're going to be let off the leash a little bit. I mean, Tranmere aren't particularly a great side, obviously come up from League 2 last year, but you can only beat what's in front of you, and Sunderland did emphatically so Tuesday night. And one game from League 2, Plymouth hammered Leyton Orient 4-0, but I'm picking up one of the goals. Ball came in, bobbled up in the air after keeper save. Zach Rudden, who's on loan from Rangers, effectively punched the ball netwards. Keeper actually saved it, and then it was hammered in.
Right.
But it was the most blatant handball you will see, potentially ever. It was if you
Wait, did the goal stand?
The goal stood, yeah.
Oh, wow.
The referee didn't notice it.
Where's VAR?
But it was as if the referee had blown his whistle and Rudden was just frustrated because he thought he was going to score. He just punched the ball. But no whistle had gone or anything like that. And then the ball came out, was put in.
Hand of Rudd.
And the hand of Rudd, indeed. Yeah. And, yeah. Plymouth won 4-0 anyway, so it didn't really have an effect on the result. But at the same time, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
Officiating.
Okay. And I understand you've got two exclusives.
Yes, we do.
For us. Whoa.
We've been very lucky.
Hold the press. Hold the press.
A couple of transfer exclusives. The window's not particularly near, is it?
No.
But we might as well talk about them because everyone seems to love a transfer story. Ibiri Easy at QPR. I started the season very well. 6 goals and 3 assists so far for the Arts. And Southampton are apparently interested in him for the January window.
He's a good player.
He is a good player.
I've seen him a few times, good player.
Yeah. Obviously there will be a question mark over where he's ready for the Premier League, but so far this season he's started very well. Yeah. Obviously it's still early days in the year. You'd like to see him do it over perhaps 2 seasons before committing to that. I mean, Southampton signed Che Adams after a great season last year for Birmingham. He's not really cut it so far, is he, on the top flight? So they'd have to consider that, but he's certainly Premier League bound, I would say.
He seems like a player that's going to be linked with every bottom half club in the Premier League between now and January.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
And another one, Swansea want Kane.
Ooh.
Wow.
Ooh, there's your headline right there.
Yeah. That's not Harry Kane.
Ah. But I believe they do want a H. Kane.
They do, yeah.
Ooh, wow.
Herbie Kane.
Get people clicking on that.
Yeah. So Swansea are eyeing Herbie Kane, who's at Liverpool. Obviously, he was at Doncaster last year on loan and helped them get into the playoffs. And then Liverpool sort of had that in mind over the summer. Weighed up whether they're going to send him out on loan again. Decided, no, he's part of our first team plans. He's actually only played about 8 minutes for the first team so far this year. And that was in the League Cup at MK Dons. So Liverpool probably thinking, okay, perhaps he does need another loan.
Yeah.
By all accounts, Swansea are big fans of the man from Bristol.
Weren't there some parallels drawn to Dele Alli when he was playing last season at Doncaster?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bit early for that.
Yeah, I mean, the way.
He is a very good midfielder, and he does score a lot of goals, and he's very mobile around the pitch. Mm. So he has got a bright future, just might be difficult to say where he's at Liverpool at the moment.
Okay.
So Swansea weighing up a move for him in the January window.
So where can we read these articles? Are they live already?
Both are live on footballleagueworld.co.uk.
Cool.
Yeah.
Check it out, guys.
The Kane one went out Wednesday lunchtime.
Okay.
And the Easy one went out Tuesday.
Cool. All right. So good stuff.
Both pretty fresh. And finally, Southend players won't be feeling... Well, then, by the time this goes live, they might be feeling a bit fresher, but today, as in Wednesday, won't be feeling too great, I'd imagine. Sol Campbell's been appointed. He oversaw the game yesterday at Roots Hall, Tuesday. Didn't... manage it though, he just watched,
right?
And he probably would have felt like walking out and ripping up his contract.
Yeah,
he signed a deal until 2022. Southend had two men sent off and lost at home 7-1 to Doncaster Rovers.
Wow, brilliant!
So, good luck, Sol. Yeah. Is what I'd say.
Well, things can only get better. That's one way of looking at it.
Yeah, and actually, on that note, I haven't written it down, but just a mention for Bolton, who got their first win this season in the EFL.
Congrats, Bolton,
beat Bristol Rovers 2-0.
Good stuff. All right, George, thank you very much for that. We'll take another break, and when we come back, we'll be redeployed in Christie's Corner. Welcome to Christie's Corner, chaps.
It's good to be back.
Yeah? Cozy? Moist?
Oof.
Damp?
Cozy, I don't mind.
Sticky?
That's getting
moist,
worse.
I think.
Too moist.
Yeah.
Say that about some of you boys, eh?
Hey.
Anyway, this week's Christie's Corner will be going down the conspiratorial route.
Ooh.
So put your Macs on, your low-hanging hats, you know, deep throat and all that kind of stuff. If you're into the Watergate scandal at all.
I was thinking of big sunglasses.
Big sunglasses, very helpful. Big newspapers, briefcases, all that shebang.
Fake nose and moustache.
Yeah, fake nose and moustache, perfect. And this is inspired... by mine and Jack's discussions about particularly, I suppose it applies to all football fans, but Man City fans in particular seem to think there is an agenda against them, controlled by an unknown force that apparently control not only the media, not only probably referees and VAR, but also UEFA and other governing bodies. And upon doing our own research, it's quite clear that this unknown entity is in fact the lizard people.
Right.
The lizard people.
Saw the lizards.
And you know, when you hear fan bases go, oh, it's a media bias against us, that's because of the lizard people. Yeah?
Yeah, very, very David Icke.
It's very David Icke. And I believe, Jack, you are going to talk about David Icke in a sec, is that correct?
Yeah, that was what I was planning on doing based on...
Lovely.
Yeah.
Well, today's question in Christie's Corner is, what conspiracy do you believe in and why? Or, you know, what conspiracy do you enjoy, I guess, and why? Because they're all sort of a matter of opinion, really, aren't they, rather than actual facts.
Yeah.
Well, try telling a conspiracy theorist then.
Well, yeah, I mean, to try telling David Icke that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Jack, I'll let you take it away with your new passion in life, I guess you could say, which is David Icke.
Yeah, I think I've opened up a can of worms which I'm going to sort of pursue for a very long time now.
Yeah.
I can see myself. There's so much David Icke content out there, you wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I thought it would be a simple Google and it would be like, you know, there's this guy, he's a bit of a lunatic, he's had this. It's a proper cult. It's worldwide,
yeah,
it's international. He is really caught on.
Let's just start, by the way, by saying there's a link to football here.
Yeah.
Because did he not represent Coventry and Leicester? Is that correct?
He was a former footballer, yeah.
I think he got as high as the second tier.
As a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think he's even done some presenting for the BBC.
Yeah, he has. I believe he did a bit of weather at one point, I believe.
Yeah,
it's very versatile.
He's a real jack of all trades, yeah.
But you see, George, he then went through his turquoise period.
Yeah.
Which is sort of his way of saying I became mental pretty much overnight.
Well, I found a couple of sort of David Icke fan pages, and one of them says he's regarded by some to be a man who has shed more light on the global conspiracy than any other. However, some regard him as a complete nutcase who is bordering on insanity.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems that...
It's a thin line, isn't it? It's a thin line.
It seems to be. But the essence of his theory is that there's basically this super lizard race who have, from what I gather, come from a different galaxy.
Yeah.
Embedded themselves within the Earth, mm-hmm. and then basically shapeshift and take the form of, you know, important political and... royal figures, you know, like the Queen.
Donald Trump.
And basically, it's the lizards are just manipulating human emotions, and making us fear society. And basically, so that we kind of do what the lizards want us to do. By creating fear in the world through these figures, we basically, succumb to their demands, whatever they are.
Well, Donald Trump could certainly be a lizard because he's spineless. Huh? Anyone?
Yeah.
A tut from Matt Dawson.
Non-vertebrae?
Everyone's going to stop listening now.
Come on.
They just switched off.
That was brilliant.
So I think when everyone was calling Theresa May a lizard, it was all, all boils back to this, because he was on live TV saying, the royal family are lizards. it's like, this might sound a bit insane, but the royal family are basically just lizards. So, I think it's a very interesting conspiracy theory, because unlike a lot of the other theories, it's very much... has a fantasy element to it.
That's what I was going to say. Most conspiracy theories are quite plausible if you sort of feel a bit open-minded to it. That one's just like lizards from a different galaxy. That's like something a five-year-old might write in a test.
Yeah.
But read his book reviews. It's just full of people going, this guy's opened my eyes up to the world. He is brilliant. He is amazing. If you're not listening to him, then, your eyes are closed to the realities of life. So... this is the beginning of a new passion for me, I think.
Oh, wow. What I like about David Icke as well is he was once interviewed and the person said, "You're completely insane." And he said, "Well, people used to say that about Jesus." So, which is...
He values himself pretty highly then.
It's not wrong, I suppose, but not necessarily right either at the same time. George?
Yeah.
What's your conspiracy theory?
Well, I spoke to you about this before.
Yeah.
And I'm not really one to... buy into conspiracy theories. Yeah,
a bit too mainstream.
Maybe. Yeah. I can't really be bothered with it all, to be honest. Okay. There's no way you're going to prove any of it.
Yeah.
What's the point?
Okay.
But one I kind of like the idea of and I've always sort of thought about is the when planes fly into the Bermuda Triangle, they're either abducted or they just go missing.
Yeah.
There's no... Because obviously there's a history of accidents happening in that area.
There's a famous story of an American... I believe it's an Air Force jet going over the Bermuda Triangle. Then all its equipment started failing, and then it had no idea where it was. And then they got through to him like, "Where are you?" And it's like, "I've got no idea." And then they never heard from him again.
I mean, yeah,
spooky.
I've got no idea. There's quite a lot of plausible explanations as where it could be.
Well,
he
got lost in the sea, basically, or above the sea.
Lizard people took him.
Lizard people took him. Yeah, I believe a lot of people looked into sort of electromagnetic fields under that part of the sea and whether that sort of ruins equipment or sort
They've
of drags
people
in. They've
done plenty of investigations, though.
Yeah. Okay, Bermuda Triangle. You're a big Bermuda Triangle fan.
Do you know what? I don't necessarily believe it.
Okay,
but it's just one that I have had in my mind for a while.
It tickles your imagination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's plenty of conspiracies out there that just think, wow, people believe that, like, the Earth's flat.
Oh, well, I mean, we haven't heard what Matt's going to talk about yet.
If you believe the Earth's flat, I'm happy to have an argument with you right now.
I don't believe that the Earth is flat.
Oh, there we go.
Okay.
Good theory,
that's a good start.
I don't believe the world is flat. I have heard what happens at the end of their own documentary, where they do an experiment to prove that the Earth is indeed flat. But it in fact proves that the Earth is curved.
Yeah.
And the guy's response is, "Now that is interesting."
I believe the Flat Earth Society slogan is along the lines of Flat Earth societists all around the globe.
Right.
Which kind of...
I mean...
Can you go around something that's flat?
Should be along, really, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
At best. Okay. Matt Dawson.
I'm going to bring a football-based one to the table.
Oh, brilliant. I like it.
This is a football podcast.
Is it?
I don't know. I've been questioning it over the last 10 minutes, to be honest.
Yeah. Sounds more like Alex Jones at the moment.
But, when Ronaldo fell ill before one of the World Cup finals.
Of course. This is the original...
The original Ronaldo,
also known as old Ronaldo, or to some, fat Ronaldo.
Yeah, which to many, is so disrespectful given how good he was.
Go on, Matt.
Yeah, and I think it was like an hour and a half before, and he initially wasn't named on the team sheet, and everyone was like, oh my God, where's Ronaldo? And then suddenly he mysteriously did appear on the team sheet. So was he drugged? Did he actually fall ill?
Ooh.
Did he just bottle it and then suddenly think he wanted to play? There's quite a few theories around it.
I've heard that he had some sort of seizure.
Yeah, I've read that as well.
And then at the time, he was sponsored by Adidas or Nike. Can't remember which one. Was it Nike?
So those famous Mercurial boots.
Yeah, oh, that's correct, yeah. And then one of the Nike representatives came along and basically went, if you think our most paid player is not going to feature in the World Cup final, you're having a laugh.
Yeah.
And then basically forced him into the World Cup final.
That sounds like classic lizards at work there.
That's behaviour.
Yeah, that's what he's getting at. He's saying all the big corporations, they're running everything.
Yeah. Okay, wow. Well...
Poor Ronaldo.
My own conspiracy, I actually have a bit of an obsession with this, which is the JFK assassination. But I won't bore you with the details because they're... So many.
Yeah.
So many different theories. You know, there's some that say there are two Lee Harvey Oswalds. There's some that even say that J.D. Tippit, which is the policeman who got shot, what actually happened was his body and Kennedy's body were swapped during the autopsy, and therefore some of the photos you see are actually J.D. Tippit because he happened to actually look a lot like JFK.
Right.
There's some that say Lyndon Baines Johnson organised it all because there was a very... mysterious party the night before between Lyndon Baines Johnson, Richard Nixon and others. And there are some that say that George H.W. Bush orchestrated all of it because at the time he was actually working as an undercover CIA agent who basically helped set up a base off a small island on the edge of Cuba that America launched the Bay of Pigs from. So, I mean, the JFK... conspiracy circle, if you like, in itself has become fantasy fiction, which in itself I do find incredibly interesting. I think the one thing you can definitely say about the JFK assassination is that the idea he was shot by one person from a building that was really far away with three shots in the space of like 2 seconds is virtually impossible, and therefore the official analysis of what happened is almost definitely not what happened. And then that leads to the question of, are the people who did the analysis incompetent? Or are they lizard people, basically?
I've got half a mind to think that you're going to get a knock on your door tomorrow from two people in black suits.
On that note, right, this is how far sort of the JFK investigation stuff has gone. Someone's actually done a book on all of the people who have been linked to the JFK conspiracy in some form. And statistically, they are something like 40% more likely to die of mysterious deaths than the average person.
Huh?
So basically, all these people have been linked. A lot of them have died very early on from very similar issues like road traffic accidents, cancer, which is something the CIA were basically using as a weapon of, well, I guess you'd say a weapon of destruction at the time, espionage. So there's lots of different interesting theories. Another one, just before I forget, this is probably the most interesting one of all, is that Woody Harrelson's dad killed JFK.
Wow, that is a turn up.
So Woody Harrelson's dad, I've forgotten what his actual first name is now, he was basically arrested and admitted to killing a governor, I believe, in Texas several years later. And then when they arrested him, he also said that he was part of the JFK assassination, but then later denied it. And what's quite interesting as well is that Woody Harrelson didn't know that was his dad until he saw him on TV being arrested for the other murder, and then went, oh my God, that's my dad, who he hadn't seen for like 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's pretty mad. So there you go.
A lot to unpick.
A lot to unpick there. A lot of information to take on board.
One for the pub, isn't it?
One for the pub. Yeah. It is one for the pub. But enough with lizard people for now. we'll take another very short break and then we'll jump back onto All Matters Football with any other business. And Welcome back for the last part of the show. Any other business? I'm just going to rattle off a few things. Jump in with your actions. Pretend it's Twitter. You know, just jump in.
Better not.
Yeah, less less vulgar.
Tone it down.
Yeah.
A lot of vitriol.
Okay, so starting off this week, Islam Slimani has the most assists of any League One player this season. He's in a strike partnership with Ben Yedder. I believe he has 6 assists, 5 goals, and Ben Yedder has 8 goals. So Ben Yedder's actually the top scorer in League One as well.
Does that say more about Slimani or League One? Or well,
probably League One.
Yeah.
Probably, or Ligue 1, I should say, just to clarify. First time 2 English players have scored for either team in the North West Derby since Michael Owen and David Beckham in 2001. Pretty interesting.
That's quite unbelievable, really.
What did you make of the game, George?
One of the better North West derbies has been in a few years, only because they've all been pretty terrible.
Yeah.
It still wasn't that great.
United playing 5-3-2 at home.
Yeah, and Liverpool just thought, yeah, actually they're quite good. It was just bonkers, really. Yeah. And then the last 15 minutes, Liverpool actually played well and could have won the game quite comfortably.
Yeah.
As they should have done, but just didn't. So, very strange.
Here's one for Matt Dawson. Patrice Evra describes Arsenal as his babies.
I mean, I've not actually seen the quote, but it sounds a little bit suspect.
I can tell you the quote. He said, when I was playing, I used to, this isn't word for word, but this is roughly what it was. When I was playing, I used to call Arsenal my babies, and I still do now.
I mean, Evra's a bit of a loose cannon, isn't he? So
that's one word for him, yeah.
Yeah, we've all seen the chicken video.
Yeah. Players walking off at Haringey Yeovil and a fan arrested at Old Trafford, both due to racism. So is that signs of some progress in English football, chaps? Are they positives?
It is. It's also a sign of what we were speaking about last week, which is English football and the media are quite hypocritical.
Mm-hmm.
We're quick to condemn, not always quick to address matters close to home, but that is obviously, it's not good to see in it happening, but it's good to see that that was the reaction.
And then finally, Andre Mariner, he just hates giving away fouls. Absolutely hates it. Lowest average per game this season, second lowest last season. I think the year before he was pretty low as well. Why does he hate giving away fouls?
He loves good football.
Loves good football.
Maybe
he just wants it to breathe.
Yeah.
Doesn't like blowing his whistle.
Okay.
He's really forgetful and constantly forgets his whistle.
Or he forgets he's a referee.
Yeah.
And just thinks he's watching the game.
He's just won a competition.
Yeah.
This is great. Okay. Such close quarters action.
Probably thinks he's doing that, you know, that virtual reality stupid thing that Jamie Carragher always does.
Yeah.
When he's like, this is what it looked like at the corner. And then he turns around and he's staring straight at the back of Raheem Sterling's head. And that's supposed to be, you know, someone marking him at a corner. Quite ridiculous. Okay, and I've just realised I've got here in big letters answer to stat, but I didn't actually give out the stat, did I?
Ooh, no.
Ooh.
No.
Ooh. All right, I'll
that's
do that.
Even worse than JJ.
That is worse. That is worse, to be fair. So I'll give it out now, and everyone's got about 3 seconds to think about it.
Right.
2 combinations have assisted each other on 3 occasions in the Premier League this season, the joint most in the league. Name those 2 combinations. And to make it a little quicker, I'll tell you that one is for Manchester City and one is for Norwich.
Well, the Norwich one's got to be Cantwell and Pukki.
Incorrect.
Is it?
Oh, what?
Buendia and Pukki.
It is Buendia and Pukki. Correct.
Who's the other team?
Manchester City.
Man City.
Mahrez and De Bruyne?
No.
De Bruyne and Aguero.
Correct. There you go. Done.
I was going to outside the box.
Well, yeah.
That's a shame.
Boo. Oh well, maybe better luck next week, Jack.
I won the quiz last week, so I've got some credit in the bank.
Very true. Okay, so that is the end of this week's show. Thank you for listening. And as always, if you do enjoy this podcast, remember to rate, review and subscribe on all your favourite podcast platforms. We will see you next week.